Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors, powered by Markentum. If you enjoy listening to Bridge the Gap, we have a special offer for you. Josh and Lucas will be recording live from Interface Seniors Housing Northeast in Philadelphia on November 13th. Podcast listeners are invited to use promo code BTG and receive 15% off. Don't miss this opportunity to learn, network, and see firsthand a recording of the Senior Living Podcast. You're listening to part one of a two-part series with Jean Makesh.
So welcome to Bridge the Gap on a really exciting episode today with Josh, Lucas, and our esteemed guest, Jean Makesh. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you, Lucas. Thanks for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about today because we are at Jean's brainchild experiment that has turned reality, amazing concept for senior living. And we are in Ohio, Chagrin Falls today, recording live from your building, and this is a really, really exciting experience. So Josh, tell us, are you excited? What's going on?
Of course I'm excited. I'm with Jean. I'm with Lucas. So naturally, I'm excited here at the Lantern. I'll tell you, as an operator in the industry, as a student of the industry, I've been able to read about and hear about what Jean has been doing here for the last several years. So pinching myself today, I got to spend like the whole day with Jean, picking his brain, hearing his story, hearing his passion. You're going to hear about it today. But this is awesome. This is the flagship. This is the mothership of where it kind of all began.
So just to let our listeners in, we've spent the past probably several hours with Gene and his staff, and they have literally rolled out the red carpet for us. And the hospitality has been really unmatched by any other experience that we've had. And I mean, it's just the truth. And so, Jean, we've been following you a while. You've been in major media outlets. You've done TEDx talks. You've been on CNN. You've traveled the globe talking about your concept. But you're also a really down-to-earth guy and very humble. But you're a leader in the space. And so I think help our listeners get to know Jean a little bit better as we walk through a couple of topics that are going to just pull back the curtain a little bit and talk about your vision of why, your vision of design, your vision on how it impacts our seniors and our elders and dementia. And I think that it's going to be a really exciting experience. So Jean, give us a little bit of introduction into yourself and tell us why.
Thank you so much, Lucas. Josh, you guys are super gracious. Thank you again for having me. Why? Why not? I always ask this question to myself. If I don't, who else will? Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I'm a runner. When I travel, I run. When I was running the streets of Chicago, love to run by the lake. And I was exhausted, tired. I stopped running, just looked up and looked at those trees, beautiful trees, beautiful trees, and took my breath away. And I said to myself, who planted these trees? Who planted these trees? Did they even know that one day it would grow up this tall and offer shade to someone like me? That's when I realized that it's important for us to start planting trees that you never get to see. I ask the question over and over to myself, why? And at this time, my mission is just very simple, is to offer hope. Hope to my elderly clients, hope to people that work with elderly, hope to my peers, hope to the industry. As I was thinking, you know, you all know that ideas come to you. One of the things I realized early on in my life is that anything that I do has to be relevant. What I mean by relevance is not relevant to me, relevant to the people that I create space or I design a space. You and I, when we build a home or we design a space, we make it relevant to our needs. And I just felt very compelled that it's important for me to create a space that I thought would be extremely relevant to my clients. And the best way for me to go about doing is to depend on my clients. I mean, I'm living my life with people that are a lot more mature, a lot more smarter, with a lot more years of experience, a lot of wisdom. And they are my best resource. And I started listening to them and really trying to understand what made them happy, what brought joy to them. There's the difference between happiness and joy. When you have joy, you're at peace. You feel fulfilled. And that was a trigger in my life that pretty much propelled my thought process and started laying the footwork that I needed to pursue the things that I believed in.
So I love it, Gene. We want to let the audience in a little bit on what we got to talk with you about today when we first met in the beautiful farmhouse, which has, we don't even have time to tell our audience the great story behind the farmhouse and this land that this sits on. But tell us a little bit. I mean, you weren't always in senior living. You know, what point of your life and career did you kind of make that transition and kind of tie that into your why?
Well, I was in my previous work life, I was employed with a very large firm, a very successful firm. And at one point, I was managing the compliance part of the rehab side of the business for this particular firm. I had about 120 nursing homes over 12 states. Truly, it was an opportunity for me to get to know my clients, not just from Ohio alone, from Oklahoma, from Texas, from New Jersey, from Wisconsin, people from different walks of life. And I just realized that as we get older, all we are seeking is for someone to listen to us. All we are seeking is we have some form of companionship or friendship. I felt at that time that it was missing in our industry. Maybe missing is not the right word. I think as a caregiver, as a provider, I thought we could offer more for our clients. So that with that mindset, I was a lot younger. When you're young, I think people say you're foolish too. Maybe I was. And I said, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to change the industry like any 20-year-old do. And I sit on that mission. I sit on the path. And so I felt that I need to create a space that would be very relevant for my clients. After I created the space, after I designed, after I constructed, I've been in the industry for a while, for about, I want to say at least for 6 to 7 years, and I really thought that I knew a lot. I engaged with vice presidents, CEOs, senior VPs, elderly clients from different walks of life, but when I started getting down on the floor, and when I started engaging with my clients, that's when I realized I didn't know anything about the business. I didn't know anything about the elderly. I didn't know what the needs are, what their preferences, what they desired. Essentially, I became a student, and they started teaching me. And everything that you see today that I have designed and I've built is purely based on their feedback, what they told me, what they expressed to me. It was everything, every design is, that we have currently is around their desire.
Interesting, interesting. So take us back to that moment where Gene said, you know what, I really think that I want to build out my own platform and I want to launch the Lantern Group, so to speak. And so kind of walk us through that thought process. What was that moment where you really envisioned it and saw it, even though it may have been a little unclear?
Well, like any youngster, I wanted to be the most powerful CEO, a very successful CEO, well-respected in Wall Street. But I do want to share an experience that I had. Mm-hmm. I love techno. And it was my kind of music when I was growing up. And techno was not very... people were not too fond of techno. Techno had its own associated, you know, lifestyle. But I love techno. And I, one day in my office, I still remember this day, you know, I was listening to techno. And usually I listen to techno when I'm really stressed out. And I'm stressed out when I'm looking at numbers. And I had the door closed and I was listening to techno music. And I heard a very gentle knock on my door. And I right away, I turned the music down. I didn't want anyone to know that I listened to techno because, I mean, techno is, you know, is associated with drugs and partying and doing crazy stuff, which I never did any of that. I just loved the music. And there was Eunice. Absolutely beautiful woman. You know, she, every single day, she just looked prim and prop. She just looked perfect. She looked at me and she said, "Gene, what is it you're listening to?" I'm like, I'm being very apologetic. She says, "Wait a second. No, no, I love that music. Why don't you play it on the PA system?" I said, "Eunice, I can't do that." "No." So, and she said, she said, "You got to play it." And she made me play it the following day. And I was really surprised. Many of my elderly clients, especially women, they just loved it. They just loved it. And I started thinking about, okay, there's a disconnect here. And the more I started thinking about it, I felt it was all about me reminding them of being young, feeling young, being vibrant, full of energy. And I think that really changed everything for me.
That was a moment, a transition point. And so... one of the things that we've enjoyed today are the brilliant stories that you have based on your experience of you really like to get your hands dirty, so to speak. You don't just have an idea and then pass that off to somebody else to execute. You seem, based on our conversations, that you really dive in and you want to learn it, the failures and the successes. And I think that that's one of the things that's apparent as any leader, any strong leader, is that they're very open about the things that they failed on, because it wasn't really a failure. It was an opportunity to learn something new. And so I think one of the things that you're best known for is the brilliance in your design aspects of how you lay out your communities. Talk to us about some of the stories and the things that you learned along the way that got you to the point of thinking like this Main Street that we're sitting on right now. I encourage our listeners to go onto YouTube to watch this later if you're listening on your podcast player. What are some of the stories that led you into coming up with these concepts and ideas?
I had a client called Norma. Norma was in her early 90s, absolutely a vibrant lady, and a very successful entrepreneur. She told me at one point she owned like 3 or 4 jets, and she was into fast cars. And she's been a client of mine for almost 2 years then. And I didn't know anything about Alzheimer's or dementia at that time. And every single evening around 5 o'clock, she would stand by the front door wanting to go home. And the first few... this was, again, in 2005.
Okay.
The first few evenings, I would try to reason out with her. I would ask her why she wants to go home, and she would tell me that she wants to go home because it's time for her kids to get off the bus, and she needs to be there to prepare food. And I would try to reason out with her, you know, in a very nice, kind, polite way, and it didn't work at all. And at that time, I said, I need to do something for Norma, because she wanted to go home, and if she's not able to go home, that becomes a trigger for other dysfunctional expressions we call, you know, behaviors. And I just felt that if there's a way I can help Norma, I need to understand. And that's when I realized that it is so important for us as providers, we need to dive into their world, really find out where they are. Back then, I didn't know much about Alzheimer's, and Norma, you know, kind of motivated me to look into Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. What I realized after extensive research is as the client, as they go through different stages of Alzheimer's disease, they revert back to their early childhood days. Okay. There are about 7 stages that we know of, and each stage is tied to a cognitive age. And essentially, you know, at that given time, Norma was at stage 4. And she was very similar to a 10-year-old, her thinking, her thought process, the way she engaged. And so that's when I realized that, okay, we need that the program, anything that we design, has to remind them of their time frame that they can relate to. If there's a way I could remove as many conflicts from the environment as possible, maybe there's a chance for me to engage with Norma meaningfully. Hmm. And that was one of the factors that really pushed me into understanding and learning about what is relevant for Norma, what would be relevant for my other clients.
So switch gears here just a little bit, because when we were kind of talking about your background, your history, and then we started talking about some of the design features, there was a couple of themes that seemed to guide that. And I think I myself, you know, I've just known Gene and the Lantern as memory care, but there's a lot more than memory care here. And you talked to us a little bit from programmatic standpoint about the assisted living and memory care. And you talked about a couple of programs you guys do here. I think one of them was Jive. Help me with the other one.
Sueus.
So, and then I also want to hear you touch on something that I thought was really fascinating, which was person-centered care and your kind of opinion on that and what you guys focus on here instead of the term person-centered care.
Personality.
So go back and tell us a little bit about the programs, how you divide up the assisted living and memory care, and then work us into that not person-centered care model and explain that to our audience.
Absolutely. So essentially, what the latest studies reveals or revealed at this, you know, so far is only 9% of Americans don't have the risk to develop Alzheimer's disease. Only 9%. If one has a single copy of APOE4, the risk for having Alzheimer's or getting Alzheimer's is anywhere between 30-50%. If one has 2 copies, the risk goes up to anywhere between 50-90%. Now, with that kind of statistics, you know, we as a caregiver, as a care provider, I just felt that we got to find a way to help the 91%. Mm-hmm. What is that we as a provider can do? We know that at some point, you know, there's going to be a tremendous amount of need to deliver, you know, good treatment, good care and treatment. I was listening to another speaker the other day, and she was telling the audience that she asked a very open-ended question. She asked, "Who wants to live up to 90?" And pretty much everyone in the audience raised their hands. And she very politely said, "Well, if you live up to 90, there's a very good chance either you will have Alzheimer's disease or you will be caring for one." So that is the real truth that we have. So as a caregiver, as a provider, what is that we should do? What is our moral responsibility? So I just felt that it is important for us to have the assisted living component and also the memory care component. We are known for memory care, but our memory care is only 30% of our business. 70% is AL. There's something called as cognitive reserve. There's been a lot of studies, a lot of revelations that have been demonstrated the last couple of years or so. And essentially what it is, in a nutshell, you and I have complete control over our functional size of our brain. And it's the way we live our life. It's what we do with our brain, how we keep it healthy, how do we work it every single day. Are we able to create new neural networks? And so I felt maybe how about coming up with designing a program potentially on the AL side that we could use to for the 91% or maybe the 50% or 80% whatever the number is, can we develop exercises, activities, cognitive activities to prevent the manifestation of the symptoms? And so we developed a program called JIVE, J-I-V-E. It's called JIVE. That's the program that we use on the AL side. So essentially, every single day, pretty much every client is subjected or is taken through that program. So the intent is to increase the blood supply to the human brain, to activate as many parts of the human brain, and to keep the brain healthy. On the memory care side, you know, by the time the clients come to us, some have an established diagnosis, some don't. See, a disease or a medical condition is a problem for you and I only when it prevents us from caring for ourselves or caring for others. When you look at diabetes, high cholesterol, I mean, we pop a pill and we're able to care for ourselves, we're able to care for others. You know, it becomes a problem when we are not able to care for ourselves or for others. So the SWAYS program, again, we developed an activity exercise brain integration program and tapping into cerebellum, which is called the mini brain, to see if there's a way we can keep our clients healthy and functional. In other words, can we enable them care for themselves? And so two different programs with two different mission and two different objectives.
Interesting.
So fascinating. One of the things I love is about Eugene is just how you think and how you process and how you see a problem and how you try to get to the root of the problem. And I love that you're not afraid to be unpopular when you really believe something, and this community, your programming is evidence of that. And we've gone through and talked about several things that maybe you got a lot of pushback on when you first started on that mission. One of the things that I could see is getting a lot of pushback, and maybe you could share, is how you interpret person-centered care. And maybe we've digressed a little bit when we talk about person-centered care and what your approach is here at the Lantern to that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry, Josh. You did ask me that question. Well, you know, to me, a person-centric approach or person-centric care should be a given. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this. Well, when you check into Ritz-Carlton or a W Hotel, you expect a certain level of service, right? I mean, it's a given. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one is saying that at the hotel. They don't have a flyer saying that we will treat you as a person when you walk in. Or, you know, the bed sheets are clean, the pillows are fantastic. They don't talk about it. That's a given. When you check into a Ritz-Carlton, a W Hotel, or a fancy Marriott, it's a given. So in our organization, we just felt that the person, every single client has to be treated as a person no matter what. Right. Now, what I also realized is that, you know, Dr. Barry Ricebergs theory of retrogenesis clearly describes how an individual, as they come down with the disease, they regress back to the early childhood days. When they revert back to the early childhood days, what we have seen personally with our clients is their personalities come out. Mm-hmm. And it is important for us as caregivers to know our client's personality. And many times, you know, you and I, who we are, what we are, our personality is formed based on experiences that we had between the ages of 3 and 10. Some say between the ages of 3 and 5, some say between the ages of 3 and 7. But that pretty much defines and really shapes who we are. Now we know that our clients regress back to the early childhood days. They're going, you know, they're reverting back. So it's so important for us as caregivers, as care providers, to know what their life was like. What did they do? You know, what excited them? What, you know, they didn't find exciting or joyful? It is really important to understand that. And I always use this example. When I go home, you know, I see my wife in the kitchen doing her stuff. And she looks at me, and she doesn't acknowledge me. She just looks, and I know that, you know, something is not right. And
we've all had that look.
Yes, often.
And I go like, okay, not, well, it's not the best time to ask for a cup of coffee. And the reason is because I know her very well. She knows me very well. My staff that are very close to me, they know exactly when to ask what. Now, that is unknowing someone's personality. You know, you know that by being close to each other, by living with you know, one another. Now, when the client regresses, reverts back to early childhood days, you know, what we have often seen is that personality. And I know, you know, when we go in to care for them, how do we know that it's they want to brush their teeth? They want to do a certain thing. Are we compelling? Are we pushing our views that we think is good for them? I'll give you another example. You know, we all have rituals, and I talk about this in my book. Ritual is you and I, every single day, we go through this every single day. I'll take you through my own personal ritual.
Great.
So I get up in the morning, and I usually pray. And then right after that, I go to my den. You know, I start working. And when it's time to get ready, I go up to the bathroom. The first thing I do is brush my teeth. And as I'm brushing my teeth, I've soaked my cheeks with shaving cream lather. Because I want my cheeks to, you know, to marinate, I should say, right? So that I can have a good shave.
Yeah.
Now, so I brush my teeth, I shave, then I take a shower, and what I do is, I'm kind of giving out a lot of personal details here.
No, this is good. We want all the details.
We're diving deep.
Yeah. But it's important for everyone to understand we all have our own rituals. Then I walk into my walk-in closet. You know, I pick up my pants, shirts, my belt, and I get dressed. I do not button my shirt. I walk into my back into my bathroom. I blow dry my hair. And then I will button my shirt, tuck it in, and put my belt. Go down, grab a cup of coffee, and look for my keys and get out. That is something that I do every single day. Every one of us, we do that every single day. Okay. Now, if I'm a patient and someone is caring for me, and they come up to me and say, you know what, Mr. Mukesh, it's time to have to get ready. I want you, let's brush your teeth. And if they give me a brush on bedside or try to get me dressed on bedside, what am I going to do?
It's going to be some pushback.
I'm not going to cooperate.
That's right.
When I don't cooperate, you know, well, Gene is not cooperative. He's a very difficult client. And when we as caregivers, when you start pushing and pushing and pushing, and I'm going to push back, ultimately, I end up, you know, they end up giving me a psychotropic drug to calm me down. So how much do we know about our clients? We all have rituals. I have a friend, you know, who told me the other day, as I was talking to her about the ritual, she said every single night before she went to bed, she had to lotion up. And one night, she was so exhausted, she didn't want to do it. She tried sleeping, she couldn't sleep. She had to get up, you know, do a ritual, and she was able to go to bed. Every one of us have a ritual. Do we know our client's ritual? And I think it's important for us to understand the personalities, the rituals, in order for us to provide the care that our client desires and prefers.
I love that. So one of the things that is fascinating to me is we spent time with you today, walking through the community, being fed a wonderful meal by your staff, is how intentional every aspect of it was. And I think as senior living operators, as developers, we all want some, in our day and time, a silver bullet that's like, oh, this is the magic pill, or this is the secret. It's all in the design. But there's a lot of things. And the things that you're touching on, you know, you wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things if you weren't very intentional, for example, in recruiting and retaining and educating your staff. As we'll talk a little bit, you know, here in maybe the next episode about design and things like that, I love that you were even intentional with your staff areas and making wonderful lounges and things like that. And we're going to hear, hopefully, some of the stories of, you touched on psychotropic drugs. That's a big topic. And we all want to know, you know, how we can reduce those. But where's the gap? How are we filling that gap when we remove those psychotropic drugs? What are the interventions and things like that? So looking forward to talking more about that.
That was part one of a two-part series with Gene Mikesh. Meet Josh and Lucas at Interface Seniors Housing Northeast in Philadelphia on November 13th. Use promo code BTG at registration and receive 15% off. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.